Well, can you tell me generally, what has it been like working in Pasadena and with Pasadena clients?
Oh,
I know that's a huge question.
Well, the best thing, of course, is very convenient. Cause,
yeah.
And we feel at home here. I mean, it just feels like we lived here all our life.
Uh-huh.
And all the sites were adjacent to other nice sites, you know, just a wonderful place. Or no place blighted around here. Every time you find a new site, it's filled with trees and terrain and interesting views and all that. So it's just wonderful every time we got a new. Well, in the early days, it was great because you wouldn't you'd get a new client and you'd look at maybe 3, 4, 5 different sites for them.
Wow.
I mean, which is early gate. So the big decision then was which site is the best. So you'd have to analyze with the site and come. And their program, it wasn't too difficult. I mean, you always find which is the best, but you'd have to spend some time on the site with the clients and analyze it in terms of view, convenience, automobile, all those sort of things. But it was so nice to have a group to select. Today, there just aren't any sites left in Pasadena.
They're, really? You know,
except like in the Mosley job, where the owner, Gus Kostropoulos, bought like 20 acres and after a lot of development and creating the sites and getting permit from the city, developed 5 or 6 lots, then you got a new site. But there just aren't really any sites for building residential construction anymore.
Huh.
The only thing you do is to, there are few sites, but they're more and more difficult and a lot more difficult to build on. But like right now, if you go out to look for a site to build a house on, in fact, Conrad, 20 years ago, started looking for a site to build his own home. Looked, and they find some, but they always had little problems with extra fill or deed restrictions or cost or, you know, a lot of factors. But like the Hernandez job, which I'll maybe show you next week, they actually to get this great site, they bought a house, which is a perfectly good house. And you just bulldoze it and build a new one.
Is it difficult to do that these days because of historical preservation restrictions?
Oh, no. If it's just a house. It was a perfectly good house, but nothing of any historical value.
Okay.
You feel a little sacrilegious about bulldozing a perfectly good 3-bedroom home with nice view and great, but what we put up there is 10 times better. So,
sure.
No guilt about that.
You said in the 70s that Conrad was looking for a place for his own house. So obviously by that point, it was getting pretty hard to find sites. Do you remember when it tipped? Like, was there a point when lots of people started moving here and snapping up sites?
Not really.
No, just sort of gradual.
Revolution. Actually, Conrad, the first site, he built his first home, which was probably not until mid-70s, happened to find a site that someone had developed up by Art Center, and it's very, I think one of the concrete contractors mentioned to him, so we went up there, and there's a long road up to this pad on top, very steep, difficult, windy road going up to a pad, and kind of a hogback site, that, you know, just kind of like a ridge.
Hogback?
Yeah, we call it hogback. Anyway, it was very good. It's 25,000, and they'd taken all the utilities up there. So Conrad hadn't built a house of his own. I'd already built a couple homes of my own.
Like behind the Gamble House, one of them?
No, I didn't build that one. I built mine on the west side of town.
Oh, that one, okay.
And Domus Solaris and Domus Dos.
Right.
And Conrad had lived in his parents' house, in a great big house in Eagle Rock, and he really got the bug to build a house in Pasadena. So found that site up on Wicks, right behind Peg Fair. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know Peg Fair or not. And so this is a great site, looking right down in Peg Fair, one direction, looking back at Art Center the other way. So we designed and did the working drawings for the house and built what he called rapport. I don't know if I talked to you about that yet or not.
Not too much, no.
he called it Rapor, R-A-P-O-R, which means the house of the sun. And
in what language?
Latin.
Oh, okay.
So he was very happy with that. I mean, it was a very well-publicized piece of architecture. It was, the biggest rub was there was no place to park.
Oh.
And, you know, a few guests, but he couldn't have any parties up there, per se. And a lot of people didn't like driving up there because it was really a hairy drive.
Uh-huh.
But then he was very happy there because he was able to exhibit a lot of his dad's paintings and the Navajo rugs that he collected. Mm-hmm. And some of the pre-Columbian art that he'd collected. But they always had a dog, and he always usually a Weimaraner. But Conrad's wife got a little upset. She didn't like it so much because there was no place to walk the dog, no place to walk around the neighborhood, and no neighbors to talk to. She was more social. And I think that was the main reason why Conrad decided to sell it. Mm-hmm. And so they did, because she just got tired of living up in that. It was pretty isolated, very isolated. I mean, you didn't see any other houses at all except City Hall and looking over the hill and looking down on a pig fair.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's when he started looking for another site that he could really retire in. And then he ended up with that pretty difficult site down on Holly Street. Mm-hmm. By Avenue 64.
564?
No, Avenue 64.
Oh, Avenue 64.
Yeah, the Holly and La Loma.
Uh-huh.
So then while he was building that, well, as he started that, when he became sick, that was in 80, he really started, he had the had lung surgery, and then he had his larynx removed from smoking all of his life.
Oh, it's terrible.
And that started in about 86, because he died in 88, so that whole process about a 2-year period. So that house was really cool. I already finished building it for him. I moved into it, and he died just a few months later.
Hmm.
So, like I said.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
You've mentioned some of the houses you've done, and we'll talk about those, but I was wondering first, what has it been like working with Pasadena clients? Have they had commonalities?
There's no difference. They're no different.
No different from anywhere else in LA?
Not really. No, not really. I mean, there's no general. They're just like any other group. You have good ones and bad ones.
Sure.
I'd like to say because they're bad, and they're all good. Well, we've been very lucky. Most of our clients are good and great. Uh-huh. We always had great rapport. We just only really have had a couple of what we call not great clients. One was the wife of I don't know how to mention of a
you don't need to name names.
Famous person, and the other, they were out in the Brentwood area, and uh-huh. then the husband was fine, but a couple here and did a very nice house for her in Pasadena. We just loved to sue everyone. They just inherent in their characteristics, and then we did a great house, and they gave us a bad time, but in all of our 40-some years of building, it was the only one that all got settled eventually. But all the other clients we've had a great relationship with, and had nothing that we did, it just happened to be their personality. They see their doctor, and their dentist, and their realtor, and everyone, it's just their modus operandi. Other than that, we've had extremely good luck with all of our clients and on a good friendly relationship. Well, you met Alex Mosley and met Carol King, and you'll meet the Amy Hernandez next week, and that's the way that we had the good fortune to be. So that's why I say that our clients in Pasadena really aren't any different than, because it's the, as I've said so many times in the past, it's so important to have the proper rapport with the people. And a lot of, especially in the latter years, all the people have come to us because they like the sort of architecture we do. They've come to us because of reputation and seeing homes we've done. So we don't have to go through that initial battle of what sort of house do you want, and they say, well, I want a French Regency or something like that. So
right.
I don't have to worry about that. They, it's just a matter of their site, their particular needs, and the mood, and then certain restrictions are there at the time.
Do you think that because of the work you do, you attract people who are more avant-garde or cutting edge?
Sure.
in their views.
Yeah, yeah, much more progressive and rational and liking more contemporary and contemporary and modern things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they know that we what to do, and they're non-traditional, mm-hmm. basically.
Have you found that you attract a high proportion of artists or musicians or people who do creative things in their life?
Possibly,
uh-huh.
or wannabe.
Yeah.
But we've done a lot of homes for doctors and psychiatrists and professional people. So again, you can't really generalize.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely. Well, let's talk more specifically about some of your favorite Pasadena or Pasadena area projects. Are there some that stick out over the years as just ones that were really special to you for some reason?
You know, and when you ask that, it's you start roaming around all the houses we've done, and I really like them all. I mean, they're designed specifically for a particular client or a couple or a family. And for a particular site, and if they're really well done, and that becomes a, you know, great solution for them and for us. And you like it, and you
sure.
think you've done a good job. And like with, you know, Carol King's is obviously a favorite, and because of the relationship I have with Carol and Richard, I mean, I come over Thanksgiving and Christmas and Easter and, you know, salon and go to various other social functions with them, and Alex Mosley, a dear friend, and it's just a matter of, they're all kind of favorite. Some I like more than others. Some are greater scale and maybe more elaborate, might have a more bigger budget, but even the simpler ones are still favorites. So.
Can you tell me about a solution that you had to find, anything that's particularly memorable about a site that you really had to work with in a different way, or a story about a client who had really specific needs?
Well, some sites are uphill, some are downhill. I think right now, one we did in Beverly Hills, where the client bought the site before he knew anything about it, anything about architecture, and it turned out they had 75 feet of fill.
Wow.
So at the deepest portion of this property, we had to go down with 85 feet with piles, concrete piles. It was a very expensive proposition. It'd be impossible today, but we managed it then. I mean, I'd have to, I really, if I had a list of the jobs that we've
sure.
done, in which, and I'm working on a book, as you know, and so
yes.
there are like 50 or 60 or 70 specific ones. But I could take each one of those and tell you about the particular
sure.
unusual requirements. But like this one here, Carol King's, for instance, there are really two lots here. And there's a dividing line right down the middle. As you drove up, there's a band of oleanders. Well, that's kind of the borderline, because we built on not knowing what the master plan would be. We did the house and pool first. And later on, as the economics better, we put the tennis court and pavilion on the other half.
Oh.
And then later on, we designed a little pavilion down by the stream bed.
Interesting.
So that was unique in that respect. And with the bridge behind it, the acoustics were a consideration, coupled with south exposure and the north view. So some things just kind of fall into place.
Uh-huh.
And you do that with every site. You know, I had to, like the Narvers, we did a house for over on Markham Place. That was one of the, it was a vacant site next to an apartment house where during the Rose Parade they park all the horses, a lot of horses there. But the Narvers had seen my own house, Domus Solaris. Grace Narver loved it. She wanted their house for her and her husband. They had two daughters, but the daughters were away at school. She wanted a replica of my house, which was a bachelor pad, but designed for them. So we took my basic plan, added a garage on both sides, and then the laundry facilities were different, and added a guest wing in the back, so when the two daughters came to visit, one at a time or both at the same time, they had that. But she loved my house so much, but we designed it with an entrance garden in front of it.
Huh.
It was a similar basic floor plan, but on a completely different type of site, with the garages attached instead of the garages down below and the swimming pool. So each job had its unique features, so we could go on for days talking about each job and analyzing the particulars, but what we did when I can, when we were, Connor and I were teaching, we would give our students, we taught different classes of course, but we would, during the year we'd always give the students a home to design, and of course we had a tremendous amount of experience doing homes for clients, so we had a lot always in Pasadena. What we'd do is to pick a site that we were currently doing a house for in Pasadena, and then give them a program of a different client. So it would be, instead of six kids, they might have three kids, or they have two kids, or they might have a grandmother. But so we didn't give our one client's site, give them the same requirements. So that made it kind of challenging, and it came up with a bunch of different ideas. And so that's, you know, I had to go through each job to analyze.
If you think about how your style has evolved over the years, are there certain projects that really show that evolution more than others?
Yeah.
Which ones would you think of?
Well, so you take the early Merriman house or the little Thompson house, which all of our early work was post and beam, and we were very proud of those, and we still are, but they were, you know, it's based on a certain module. And so that every 8 feet there would be post and there would be a beam on top of it, and then it'd be very simple and very inexpensive. And then today those look very thin to us.
Thin? What do you mean?
Well, because there would be 4x4 post with a 4x12 beam, and they look very spindly.
Uh-huh.
They were graceful and light and delicate, but they're very economical. So we went through a period like today, even though it's a very small room, you don't see very thin post. You see that this is very stiff structural, sculptural column. And then this was a transition period when Jerry Brown became governor. He got into the Title 24, which restricted the amount of glass that you could have, reduced the amount of total glass. So to get this much glass here, we reduced the ceiling, and we raised the floor plane like here, so we concentrate the area there, otherwise you'd end up with a little window like that. And this was relaxed somewhat, but this was almost at the height of the Title 24.
Really? And this is about 6 feet by six
feet
wide?
About 8 foot by 4 foot.
Foot by 4 foot, okay.
And so we'd have to design houses to modulate around. Sometimes we had a pretty low budget, we'd design it around a standard 4x8 window. If we didn't have a budget, we could make it anything we wanted and have to cut the window down to fit the opening. So it's a lot of different factors to be considered.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a great example. And also Mosley's, which was much more sculptural too, but Title 24 had been relaxed. You could have more glass because of different engineering factors, more insulation, more hard materials, a variety of things, they relaxed. And but Mosley's, where we could have more glass, we couldn't use redwood because it's up in the fire district.
Oh.
So you notice in Mosley's there's no wood on the outside.
Right.
Oh, it's all stucco.
Yeah.
As has to be 1 hour. And so that created a different mood, but and of course that's because of the site being triangular in form. We took a whole different approach in the view, and a lot of each site has its own factors.
Huh.
So it's a matter of coupling the site with the requirements of the client and hoping they all mesh together and come out right.
Were those restrictions because of energy requirements frustrating to you?
Oh yeah, they were very restrictive in the beginning. Average room, instead of an all glass or, you know, two walls of glass, you'd end up with a window, maybe a 4x4 window in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And to have the living room all glass is virtually impossible.
Wow.
So you had to work around it. As I said, you lower things, and we use French doors, so we count the wood frame around the French door, and so we didn't have to count that as glass.
Oh.
With all kinds of little gimmicks and maybe cheat a little here and there, but what he had to do. That was Jerry Brown just trying to, in his, you know, his austerity program, trying to reduce, eliminate heat loss and gain, and he created toilets that didn't use as much water and things such as that. So we had to put up a Jerry Brown in a lot of respects.
And when you said that the rules were relaxed, when did they start to be relaxed?
Oh, they became kind of ridiculous, and then people were fighting. When architects saying, you know, we can't get much opening as we wanted to, and they found ways of insulating windows and insulating the ceilings, and we even got one point where we specified insulated curtains.
Huh.
So, and over the years, we got rid of Jerry Brown, we got rid of a lot of the Title 24, and we were able to get the kind of house that you saw at Mosley's last week.
Sure. Do you ever look back on some of your early houses? You said obviously you're very proud of the post and beam, but do you ever think, what was I thinking? Or are you more understanding of who you were?
Oh, no. We realized that was very good at the time.
Yeah.
I have no compunctions about it whatsoever.
Oh, good.
No, we still, as you know, I'm working on a book with Alex, and I go through, starting off our, all the houses would be in chronological order, and we're starting off with the early posts and beams, and showing how realistic and how unique they were at the time.
Yeah.
And we were kind of brainwashed by other, some like Smith and Williams in the past, they were doing a similar sort of thing, and SC at that time was teaching post and beam, and we were brainwashed in that direction. Fortunately, we were feeling pretty good at it. And we were, you know, being involved with Straub at the time, who was one of the best. So no, those are still great pieces of architecture.
Uh-huh. Now you focused almost exclusively on residential work throughout your career. Why?
Well, it was kind of a love of ours. We knew we were good at that particular thing. And however, I told you we did do some commercial buildings. We did the home of Richard Frank, and that led to, because he was president of Lowry Foods, when they decided to do a new Lowry Food headquarters, that they we had a good relationship with them, so Richard felt that a lot of his daytime activity was spent in his office. Why couldn't the office have a residential quality about it?
Oh.
And Buff, Straub, and Hensman were damn good at doing the house. Why couldn't they do an office? It's just a different version of the way you live. So we designed the office with all of the office spaces looking onto gardens and courtyards and everything being very open and having kind of a residential quality to it. And it worked. And along with that, we had to do two experimental kitchens, one all gas and one all electric, and then we had to do a portion of a marketplace so they could display their spices and things like that and see what the reaction of people. And along with that, we got Saul Bass, who is a client of ours, designed the L logo, the Lowry logo, and
sort
of created tension. There are a lot of little side things that go along with architecture.
Yeah.
And working with the Frank, we had a very successful building and plant. And we also designed it. It was very inspiring working with Frank. Richard Frank is very young and progressive, and he realized that selling the product, that building and the foods in the early stages, to design the building that would show they could have tourists through it, so they could have people come in and go through the plant and go through the kitchen and the seasoning salt and show how it's worked, and then actually have a little lunch or something to prepare for it. So it really turned out as a great publicity gimmick, and Lowry seasoning turned into Lowry, all the various seasonings for his spaghetti mix and all those, which I may have mentioned before. So, and people loved to go there to not only have a little free tour, but to get some free snacks and buy Lowry seasoning salts and seasonings. It was very clever.
When was that? What year did you design that?
That was probably 1960.
Okay.
59, 60.
That's a great story.
Yeah, it was very clever, and you know, being involved in that as opposed to the variation on the theme. I mean, we're doing mostly residential work, but Lowry Foods was a great experience. And it happened because we weren't in competition with anyone, which is an evolution of working with Frank in his home. Mm-hmm. And the same, similar thing, we had some clients, we had friends that were, well, the Mirman, for instance, we did the, I think it was the Glen Oaks Medical Center.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We had done, we did that for, Ben Mirman was one of the group of doctors that wanted to do a medical building.
Is that on Fair Oaks in California?
Fair Oaks Medical Center, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen it.
Post and Beam.
Sure,
so,
yeah.
You know, we did that, well, we did that early 60s, I think.
Oh.
And I know, I think it was later. I don't think Straub is with us. We had another, I think it was when McCune was with us, because we used to have to meet once a week with one of the doctors and their nurses to analyze what their specific needs were.
Oh, okay.
In terms of machinery and equipment and bandages and then whatever they may, you know, we did a pharmacy in that. So we had to meet with the pharmacist and the obstetrician and the pediatrician, and each one has particular needs and the way they function. So they're very concerned about making it as perfect as they could for each doctor. There are a group of doctors we're doing it for, and so that was tremendous effort put into that, and that was has a residential quality to it too. And we were still involved in Post and Beam, and then we did a few other smaller medical buildings for clients that we'd done a home for, or the new people that we had done a home for. And then when we another Saddleback Inn was. That was about 120,000 square foot of office building, and I don't recall how we got involved with that particular client.
Where is it?
It's out in Saddleback in Norwalk.
Oh, okay.
Out by close to Disneyland.
Yeah.
They had a big hotel there and a restaurant, and they wanted us to do the office building, which we did, and it was quite good. It's four buildings of 30,000 square feet each, and. It was very successful.
Huh.
And those are the major commercial buildings we did, but we didn't get involved in doing schools or public buildings. They were just too damn competitive.
Really?
And we weren't built to, yeah, I mean, it's extremely competitive. And we had started off on a residential basis doing the tracks and individual homes.
Right.
And then in 52 building a first house, and we just liked the scale and the intimacy of a small office, and we didn't feel comfortable getting to be a big firm and doing great big things and being very competitive.
Huh.
I like to keep it small,
and
we never had more than six drafting boards.
Huh. And competitive, you mean that you'd have to submit bids against other companies?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it got very political, and you have to start entertaining a lot of executives and going out to country clubs and playing golf and all that sort of thing. And I don't know what other things you had to do to get jobs. And of course, I didn't even consider any kind of bribery, that sort of thing.
Okay.
We just didn't want to play games. And we felt that we could be successful enough doing what we were doing without getting too big.
Hmm.
We wanted to keep on the small scale, much more comfortable.
Huh. That's interesting.
Having an office of 100 drafts who didn't appeal to us at all.
Huh. And most of your clients, as you said, they came to you because they knew your work and they wanted
to. We started to get a reputation through
work
that we'd done and publications we'd involved with and people we knew that it's just kind of evolved.
Huh.
We never did have a PR person. And we were getting a lot of things published in the LA Times about that. We had our first cover of the LA Times in 1952.
Right, you mentioned that.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw that picture in Mosley's office.
Yes, I did. I did.
It was always kind of, for some reason, we had a whole batch of covers framed in our other office that kind of we got rained on, but. Alex kind of liked that when he has it hanging up there for some reason.
That's nice.